I'd like to say Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store, Betty Jean Nativio, and Howley Girl.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Betty Jean Nativio, artist for hire, teaching both art and cooking, including the School of Chocolate Art for all ages and abilities. Multi-art mediums, including reverse glass painting, available for events, signage, custom gifts, and more. More information at BettyJeanNativio.com or 808-652-3781.
Howley Girl Island Suites presents The Tea Room in the Gallery, located in Kinipopo Shopping Center in Kapa'a, offering full-service high tea and desserts. More information at 808-822-2253.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
And we are listening to you. And if you do want to call in today, it's 808-826-7771.
It's a good day to sit inside, listen to the radio, and grab your phone and chat. A dark and stormy day in Princeville.
Yeah, a lot of thunder and lightning, actually, in Kilauea that I noticed, and in Lihue earlier. It was dumping rain really heavy. I was trying to look it up. I picked up some young people hitching, just got off the plane and wanted to go hiking in the mountains, so they ended up getting a Felicia scolding. Not exactly a scolding, but like I wasn't even pulling off the side of the road. I was going, hey, you know, showing them the map, showing them where the water comes from, comes down these steep valleys. So I don't know if I was effective or not, but
they're just going to head off into some valley. And
well, I gave them a lot of heavy warnings, and hopefully they went to the hostel or something,
right.
You know.
Right.
But I wouldn't take them where they wanted to go. So it's kind of bad. But it is really important to be careful with what's going on out in the rain, because the center of the island gets a lot more rain than the edges. So if a lot's happening on the edges, there's quite a bit in the middle, and then it's got to come down these steep hills. And so you can get big rise in the water, like flash floods. So, you know, we've lost people even recently, so we need to be very careful. I'm just kind of putting that out there. I've been looking at the papers. I brought a number of them in here, plus I see it on Facebook and everything else. Many issues that people are maybe needing to have dialogue on. I see we have the dairy made the paper, maybe this was yesterday, the day before. The Garden Island, yes, thank you. And then I have in front of me more about the Humane Society. That's a big issue. I have right in front of me something called Continuing Our Revolution. I think that's really the national thing with Donald Trump. Tonight, or probably even right now, you probably know more about this than I do, is having the joint session of Congress, speaking to them.
Yeah, started at 4 o'clock our time.
Okay, so right now.
So, I could take a look and see if it's proceeding according to plan.
You could look at that in a minute, and then I'm just kind of trolling out there for some of the things that people seem to have a lot of concern about. Another one I see is the bridge in Wailua, and then the water diversion in Wailua. I see, I've got a story in here that just talks about the river runs around it, about the buildup of soil and stuff in the stream of Waimea, though it should be closer to a river, it is a stream because of significant diversions. So water diversion, huge issue on Maui right now. And an issue here, water diversions is a big piece of everything that came up today. I went to the planning committee meeting, and so that was in there also a little bit of talking about, you know, how do we deal with our watershed management. If I could give a little bit of shout out to the planning department.
How are they doing?
I think they're doing a pretty good job. I've been following the issue of the general plan update pretty closely, and I want to give them an above average to, you know, a really high mark in terms of listening to the people. I see that they're working really hard to add in verbiage and wording and put a lot more in with defining ahupua'a systems and giving real reference and deference to our host culture and the wisdom of our traditional Hawaiian culture in many different aspects there. It's a work in progress, but I went to that. And
let me ask you, taken as a whole, is it in its current form pointing to a sustainable future for Kauai?
Yes, and that's the goal. And, you know, there's all kinds of competing interests. Like, you know, our population keeps growing. Where are they going to be? How are we going to be able to make it be affordable? You can't really upend, our economic process, that if somebody wants to get paid a whole lot for their house, they're probably going to sell it to the person who wants to pay them a whole lot. You know, it's not really the county's fault that people are selling their houses to the highest bidder. You know, that's a big part of the problem.
Right.
So land is worth a lot. There certainly are other elements that can happen to... when one suggestion had come up from one of the commissioners today about looking at how when big landowners will land bank with cattle on it, and so they get the lowest possible tax rate, but then in the end they can switch it over and turn it into something else. It allows them to sit on the land for a very long time. There are a lot of important dynamics that are we really need to look at and examine, and it's you can't always blame the people who are in there right now. It happens to be their responsibility to correct it. But whoever's sitting in a certain position isn't typically who's at fault,
right,
for the extrapolation of what worked in the past. For maybe it was perfect in the 60s or the 70s, and it's a constant process of trying to update it. And I see a little bit of a tension between part of the community who says, wait, you know, we really need to look at this very, very carefully, and the planning department who says, well, you know what, we have been looking at this very, very carefully for 2 years, and even if people new to the process haven't been looking at it, we have, and we appreciate what you're saying, but we also need to move along and start doing our county zoning ordinances to be able to be implementing the goals.
Right. To what extent is the plan taking into consideration sea level rise?
There was some more added into that, and not enough. Mm-hmm. Not enough. And I went to the sea level rise, and we're going to do a show on that coming up, even maybe next week.
Great.
Kapa'a, Kealia, a whole lot of places are right there at sea level.
Right.
Kekaha. And so places like Kapa'a that have a sewer, like, well, what happens with that, mm-hmm. right? I mean, what happens with the road? We don't even have the money to even think about making those changes to code at this point. And it gets hard to encourage people to make these plans of something that might happen in 20 years, but that's when needs to be paid for. I don't panic over it because I know the kind of people that we have living here, and if something happened and that road got swamped, well, you know, we could sideline the rules and use a couple bulldozers or whatever and just start making an inland route. That can happen. So I don't feel a lot of fear about what would happen there, but I would say it is not represented deeply enough in there. And when you look at what is out there for the national averages or the indices that they're looking at, you know, it's kind of a best case analysis. And there are many people who say the sea level isn't rising. You know, we have that dynamic. Some people believe that, and I use the word believe because none of it is a fact. The future is not a fact. So some people,
no, but the present is. Presently, sea levels are rising.
Presently, sea levels are rising. Presently, global temperatures are rising.
Right.
Presently, ice is melting.
Right.
So some people believe that's going to continue to be a pretty serious problem.
Right.
And it can go up anywhere from, say, 3 to 5 feet, you know, in 100 years from now. But they really don't have a sense of how fast that would go up.
No, but they've made models, and what they're finding so far is that it's happening more quickly than their models.
As I said, it's kind of optimistic what they're planning on.
Right. Okay. All right. Climate change, sea level rise. Yeah, let's do a show.
Oh, yeah, let's do a show. And, you know, I don't really know the facts. I just try and do my best to pay attention, and whatever I'm saying, I'm reverberating. But even when we're talking about that, like, one of the issues is the dairy. Like, the dairy, the Hawaii dairy farm, the proposed dairy farm, isn't even on the general plan update, and it's not on the South Shore development plan. And so that seems to be a gaping hole in the dialogue of what could be there. You know, what we have seen, I think we announced it last week, is that the Office of Environmental Quality Control said they weren't going to accept that final EIS as being environmental impact statement as being accurate, that there would be an impact. They were denying it. So last that we heard, the Department of Health, who would be taking it, they're not going to be hearing it because the dairy pulled back. They withdrew their applications. There's about 3 or 4 different applications. It might be that somebody from that organization gives us a call, you know, either the dairy or the people who are concerned about the dairy. That's a big example.
Sounded like it was going to set the process back by a couple years at least. Is that?
Well, I mean, when I read the email that I got from Hawaii Dairy Farms, that they made it sound like, well, we're just going to, you know, we'll just resubmit. But when you look in the rules, it says you have to start from the very beginning. That's why you can have a draft environmental impact statement, and you can keep putting that out and keep updating your draft. But when you put out a final that says, okay, this is what we're going to do, and the final isn't supposed to be treated like a draft, so if the final is denied, or if it's withdrawn, the rules say, okay, you start over. You start the whole process over.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've been pretty busy this last couple of weeks. We can maybe talk about that later in the show. But the important ag lands that's been on the county council's agenda twice, last week and the week before, and that's the process for how certain land is defined as important ag land. And that's a big deal. You know, do we put it up steep slopes? Do we put it in valleys? And sometimes when they look at the 8 criteria of what defines important ag lands, it's looking at what's important for big industry. And anybody might want to be farming on flat land. But, you know, the natural way for how Hawaii did a lot of their farming was in these valleys, was in the crevices, and doing, they certainly did a lot of kalo, but they would have it right along the natural flow of the water.
Right.
And so that was a strong pathway.
So are any landscapes like that being designated as important agricultural lands?
Well, I am not an expert on it, but I have seen it's mostly the flatlands and mostly in the big, you know, where the big farms are, where the big areas are. So it's important ag lands for people with equipment. When you look at what's there, in fact, like where the Hawaii Dairy Farm is, I think a goat might have a hard time farming some of that land. It is so steep.
Right.
It's right up a a very sheer cliff. But, you know, we will see. So, that's something that I need to be paying a little bit better attention to, is how that process is moving.
So what's happening with the Humane Society?
Well, there's a lot happening with that, and it's very possible we will get calls on the Humane Society. One of the things is there's a lot of discussion about whether it's part of the problem is the board. You know, we've had a number of directors and challenges over the past 10 or 20 years, and they seem pretty similar. I have a call, so let's see. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Felicia. This is Bridget Hammerquist.
Oh, hi, Bridget. So you must have felt my energy out there about Hawaii Dairy Farm. I was talking a little bit about it. Can you clarify for us what is the status and what's happening?
Oh, I'd be happy to. Yeah, that a lot of people want to know, because with them withdrawing their final environmental impact statement, a lot of the public is not really sure what that means. It was in the paper, and then, of course, some people don't even know that that was in the paper a week ago, you know, because they might have missed it. But basically, as you know, Felicia, there is this large industrial dairy proposed for Mahalapu Valley, just six-tenths of a mile from Mahalapu Beach. They've been in the process of trying to persuade the public and the state that it's safe. They were going through an environmental impact study, which actually was triggered by a statute in the state of Hawaii. They said it was voluntary, but the department now has come out and identified it was triggered pursuant to the Hawaii Revised Statute, Section 343. It was actually required, Felicia.
Mm.
So that cat is sort of out of the bag. And in the course of doing the environmental impact study, they had different phases, and the public got to weigh in on the first notice, and then they got to weigh in when the draft was printed. We got to comment. All our comments were due last July. And then the dairy took all our comments, and they were supposed to answer the environmental comments and the concerns point by point, is what the statute says. And when they filed their final environmental impact statement, I know there's a lot of people who had made comments, and they called and said, but I didn't get an answer to mine. I had several of those calls. Others said they didn't really answer my concern. They said stuff, but it didn't really answer what I raised.
Yeah, mine was kind of general. I got a response, but it was a general statement. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I had raised concerns about the water from the Waiopili, from the Waitā Reservoir being drawn at the rate of 3 million gallons daily. That's what their lease provides, and the dairy said they'll use at least 2.93 million gallons every day to water and to irrigate and the various sources of water that they need. But that's a lot of water, almost 3 million gallons a day. So my concern was there's a old sugar diversion that fills the Waitā, and how long can that give them water at that rate? How sustainable will that be?
Do you know where that water is diverted from? Where is the water diverted from?
Yes, I've seen it. It's called the Hule'ia stream diversion.
Okay.
And it comes off of the mountain Mauka of the tree tunnel. And it was built in 1957 to divert water to the sugar irrigation system, ditch irrigation system for all the cane fields that had been developed down in Kaloa, and basically it was then McBride Sugar, yeah?
Yep.
And so that it's a big concrete diverter, and it's like, it's called a 100% stream diversion because it takes literally 100% of the stream and channels it into this big 60-foot concrete culvert that runs it then under the highway and directs it through ditch network down into the Waitā Reservoir. And so there are people in Puhi that have tarot field that are trying to get the state Commission on Water Resource Management to have at least part of the stream flow restored, because they feel that the stream flow that used to go toward Lihue, going down, you know, toward the bay there at Nauwiliwili, past the, through the fish pond, the Menahui fish pond, has been really reduced because of that diversion over the years. A lot of the natural spawning has changed, but more importantly, they want it for the taro fields that are the taro that's being grown there by local people.
Mm-hmm. And strong flow is helpful because then the water is colder, and then the quality of the kalo is far better. When the water gets warm from slow movement, it tends to rot the corm.
Yeah. And there's a lot of precedent. I mean, there's been a couple of cases that went all the way up to the Hawaii State Supreme Court on Maui where these stream diversions were ordered to be taken down, because when the sugar stopped using them, as they did here, there's no purpose. There's no reason to keep them in place. It's healthier for the stream beds to restore natural flow. So I know Tim Bynum, when he was alive, when we met with him, several members of Friends of Mahalapu met with him, he actually was one of the first people to raise that concern with the dairy personnel and ask them, should you lose that stream diversion that's feeding the Waitā now, and which is really waters of the state, what will you do to maintain the cattle? Because it takes upwards of 600 gallons of water to produce 1 gallon of milk. So dairy farms are known to be big consumers of water. It's just required. It's the drinking water, it's the washing water, it's the irrigation water, it's water, water, water. That's the industry. It requires it.
Have you been following the Commission on Water Resource Management? Because I know that they were here recently and there were some strong issues. A little bit more focused in the Wailua watershed, where there's 100% diversion off the North Fork of the Wailua River. But they are in consideration, which will affect a number of waters across the state and certainly island-wide. Have you been following the Commission on Water Resource Management?
I have, and I attended a hearing when they came here to the island. I think you may have been there as well. But they were here for 2 full days, and they were addressing diversions on the west side, right?
That was a year ago. They were here about a month and a half ago, and and I was on the radio when they were here, so I didn't hear it. But so I just wondered if you saw that. No worries.
I knew there was an issue because there was a lot of people on island that challenged the Kauai Water Department filing of a FONSI.
Finding of no significant impact for an 18-inch pipe that's basically intended for Honomaulu. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, and I don't know that the Commission on Water Resource Management has made a final determination on that yet. I know they've taken testimony, but I don't know that they've actually decided that issue. But that issue is springing up all over the state. The corporate diversion of water, in this case, one of the things that was pointed out by the director of the Office of Environmental Quality Control was that he felt one of the questions asked was along the same line of what I'd asked that hadn't been answered. The question was asked by Eileen Ketchlowian as well. What's going to happen if the water diversion is taken down? Where will your water come from? And what right does Grow Farm have to sell through their lease to you? That's a term of the lease, so it's a sale. What right do they have to sell our water if they're not a public utility? What right do they have to sell it to you as the dairy? And that was an issue in Kauai Springs as well, which the Kauai Supreme Court commented on in the Kauai Springs case. The court noted that Grow Farm was acting as a utility in selling the water running it through their pipes to Kauai Springs, and they didn't really have a right to do that because it was from Mount Kahili again, same area. Mount Kahili provides the Hule'ia stream. That's where the flow comes from, is Mount Kahili. Mm-hmm. And the same source for the water for the Kauai Springs. So I know I heard, trying to remember his name, the gentleman who is with KCC that is somewhat of a water specialist, and he actually read a statement recently.
Adam Asquith?
Adam Asquith, yes. And he read a statement to the Planning Commission, which I wish I had a copy of. It was so well stated. And he said, you know, here was the decision of the Planning Commission in Kauai Springs, and the Hawaii Supreme Court totally supported them and said, no, it was not okay for Grove Farm to act as a public utility and to sell waters of the state.
And you might have missed this little nuance, but he had a 5-gallon jug of water there. And then he had also a little syringe of about 5 cc's of water. And so he made that comparison, saying Kauai Springs, with this tiny little 5 cubic centimeters of water, were shut down, whereas this 5 gallons of water isn't being questioned. So he had that physically there when he made that testimony.
You're right, because I'm legally blind. That part I missed. And that's a good example, because far more water is being sold to the dairy on a daily basis than Kauai Springs ever took away or proposed to take away from Kauai. So the proposal of what the dairy is going to require is huge. So in the course of doing their environmental impact study and all the phases, they filed the final environmental impact statement, and that was filed January 17th of this year, 2017. And the Department of Health had only 30 days to review 9 volumes. So the director of the Department of Health said, you know, to her affiliate agency, the Office of Environmental Quality Control, she said, I would appreciate, that's your area of expertise, I would appreciate your review along with my department's review, and I'd appreciate hearing from you.
So you're referring to Department Head Dr. Ginny Pressler, and this is Bridget
right.
Hammerquist from Friends of Mahalapu, who has followed this issue for, at least 2 years, on the air with me right now on KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Felician Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Continue.
Yeah. So Dr. Pressler heads up the Department of Health, and Dr. Pressler was appointed by Governor Ige, and she's relatively new in the Department of Health. She came on board after the dairy proposal was underway and going through its various phases. But nonetheless, she is the captain of the ship now, and so she turned to her affiliate agency, Office of Environmental Quality Control, because they are really the specialists on the Hawaii Environmental Protection Act. They are the HEPA pros. And she said, please assist us with a review of this document. And you can find this explanation actually all set out on the Department of Health's EPO, or Environmental Protection Office, website. There's an EPO Hawaii.gov site, and you can read about it. But basically, it just explains that the director turned to the other director and said, your thoughts, please. And Scott Glenn heads up the Office of Environmental Quality Control. And on the 16th of this month, February, 30 days after the 9 volumes were filed, he did, in fact, issue a comprehensive report. It's 116 pages long, and it's on the EPO website. People can read it in detail, where he finds many areas not adequately addressed and some not answered at all. So his recommendation to the director of the Department of Health was to please not accept the FEIS as final, because he didn't feel that it was in any way ready to be finaled. Meanwhile, just before that, the dairy apparently had been working with analysts at the Office of Environmental Quality Control, according to their press release. And I think they knew where the recommendation was going to come down, was going to be to not accept their final environmental impact statement. And so they asked the Department of Health for an extension of time and asked them to take an additional 8 days for the review, which statutorily is permitted. The department granted them the extension, so then that gave Dr. Pressler till the 24th of February to act. But then, lo and behold, to all of our surprise, the dairy came in with hand-delivered letters to the director of the Department of Health last Tuesday on the 21st, and also to the director of the Office of Environmental Quality Control, announced they were withdrawing their final environmental impact statement. They're fully withdrawing. In other words, they were taking it out of the department and not permitting the department to make a final determination on it.
So when they do that, there is kind of like taking a timeout at the very end of a game or something like that, right?
Well, they wanted to characterize it like that, Felicia. They were basically saying, we are going to take this, and they did say. They put out a press release, and they put out the news from the farm. It's on their website where Amy Hennessy says, we're going to take this back, and we're going to they're going to rework it.
And Amy Hennessy is
the public comment and agency comment, and they're just going to refile
and she's the public relations specialist for?
She is the public relations or public communication. She's the speaker.
Just in case somebody listening doesn't know who she is. So.
Oh, yes. Amy Hennessy works for Ulupono Initiative, which is the company owned by the billionaire Pierre Omidyar that used to own eBay.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the spokesperson for both Ulupono Initiative, Pierre's company, parent company, and she's also the spokesperson for the Hawaii Dairy Farm. So she's been in the media a lot. And so she did a press release and a public statement on their website that said, we're taking it back. We're going to improve our responses to agency and public comments, and we're going to refile our final environmental impact statement.
So they're not really supposed to be able to do that. But I didn't see them addressing the 29 Kuleana lands within there. Did they do that in that final environmental impact statement? You know, we're seeing how the northeast side is having some issues with some quiet titling going on Kuleana lands. Mark Zuckerberg has withdrawn his
bid for quiet title.
But
there's a real question on whether or not you can quiet title a Kuleana property, because when the Kuleana lands were given through a land claim award, they're called LCAs, the land claim award, the intent was that the heirs of the descendant who got the land was supposed to have rights of access in perpetuity, which is a legal term that means unbreakable, forever. And so quiet title is a legal process where you don't know who the owner is now, and so you basically publish a notice in the paper, and you publish the notice a certain number of times, and then you go into court and say, I can't find the owner. I've printed and those legal notices are fine print. Nobody reads them. And you say, I've published, I've met my publication requirements, and I hereby move for title of this parcel because it happens to be incorporated within a parcel I bought, or it's adjacent to a parcel I bought, whatever they're asking the court, and they're saying, I want to own it, I'm willing to pay the taxes on it. And then they basically take the property as their own. And in fact, Grove Farm had a fairly massive quiet title action that they filed in 1976 against several of the Kuleana parcels that are on the dairy site. There's at least 29 Kuleana parcels at this dairy site. And when you say, did they address it in the FEIS? Well, not really talking about it, but what they did was they put in maps that show the Kuleana properties, but they don't show what the title is to them. The only thing I can tell you, Felicia, for sure, is that when Grove Farm dedicated the area that the dairy is in as important agricultural land, you know, you've probably heard some mention of the fact that this dairy is supposed to be on IAL, or important agricultural land, and that's the good use of IAL land to have, you know, an agricultural operation, and they think the industrial dairy qualifies as that. But the one thing we did find was when the land was dedicated for IAL, they specifically excluded the Kuleana parcel. There's no explanation as to why those didn't get dedicated into IAL, but one of the reasons may be because the title of them is still an issue. And I suspect they couldn't dedicate them or they would have, because it doesn't make sense that they had to carve these out. And even the dairy people show on their map, they show the Kuleana parcels. And they were basically taro farms that were worked by the Hawaiians. And then the Hawaiian families that were working them got those parcels granted to them and their heirs in perpetuity. That's the way the grants read. So we've asked for some help to try and give us some legal guidance on whether or not those parcels are something that they can take and have cows graze on and build their buildings on. I don't know that they really have title to them. I know they're not part of the IAL land, but I don't know what the consequence. And the dairy really doesn't get into that in the FEIS at all. They just identified them. So that's really all they did. But now they withdrawn their FEIS. When they gave their letter of withdrawal, they actually cited a Hawaii administrative rule. They named it. They said, we're withdrawing pursuant to 11-223-F. And so when you go to read that section, it's interesting because it basically says that an agency or an individual applicant, like the dairy farm is, they're not a public agency, but they're an individual applicant, can withdraw an FEIS. But then it says that when they renew their final or their EIS, they have to start with a new EIS.
So they would have to begin all over again.
They'd have to begin all over again. And right now, they've taken the position publicly through their press release that they just get to file a new FEIS, which cuts off public comment, right? Because the public doesn't really have a comment period for a final EIS. It's just up to the director at that point. So it cuts off any public input. And they wanted to take it back, and they wanted to try to address the areas of deficiency that the director of the Office of Environmental Quality Control called out. They wanted to address those and then just give it back again and say, okay, now how's this? You know, and the public can't say anything. And we believe that that would not only violate the letter of the rule, the law, it's part of the Hawaii administrative rules, but it also ignores the fact that they did at least expand their FEIS in two areas I can think of right off the top of my head. There's a whole lot more information in the final environmental impact study about their cemetery for the dead cows, the dead adult cows and dead baby cows, that was not in the draft EIS.
Well, that's good, because that was really under-addressed.
It was way under-addressed. And it's still under-addressed, but it didn't even get public comment because it only appeared in the FEIS. And it's recognized by the director that it's under-addressed there.
So,
and not even wasn't even part of the study initially.
So I want
to that degree
bring us
and
back.
The other thing they did was a marine study.
Okay.
They finally went down and evaluated the impact on the ocean and the marine life and the reef in a way that was actually a marine study. They did it in December of 2016. That was 5 months after the public comment period was already closed. So there's no way that was offered to the public for input.
So
those two areas are big.
Those are big areas. So bring it back to the big broad brush strokes is that the dairy farms permit is at least at this point a bit on hold, right? Because they withdrew their final environmental impact statement. Arguably, by statute, they need to start the whole process over. They're suggesting maybe they don't need to do that, but that's basically where we're at.
We also know they also went in at the same time, and they withdrew their NPDES general stormwater construction permit application from engineering.
Right. There was three permits pulled.
Yeah.
So they've pulled back, so we don't really know where that direction is going, but it's an interesting piece because by statute they're supposed to make that change. They have to go all the way from the very beginning. And as we will start to be feathering into other issues, because I know I have other callers that are holding on other topics, we're looking at, I've been following the Mauna Kea 30-meter telescope contested case hearing. And
right.
There's so many parallels in that, though the big striking difference between the two is that the Mauna Kea topic is highly, highly focused on the impact of the Hawaiian cultural history and present and future. It sometimes surprises me.
It is an aspect of this, too, though, Felicia, because we have at least four complaints that were filed with the Department of Land and Natural Resources, and one of them, I think I may have mentioned to you, was written all in Hawaiian. And these are detailed complaints filed by Hawaiian people that set out the cultural impact.
Okay, so that's interesting.
Ancestors' graves that are out on the site and are, you know, truly trying to get help.
So that's interesting to me because I think that this is being characterized, at least like the way I've seen it some of the meetings, is that it's characterized as a newcomer issue, but it is really affects everyone. And when I go to meetings, it's not all newer people. And, of course, I know you were born and raised in Hawaii, but, you know, not.
No, it's not at all limited to just
people who've
moved
here.
People that have moved here and migrated here. There's a lot of local people who, they are actually the family descendants from the people who were owners out there.
Yeah. And then there's people like the Fayas who did have the two dairies. And even they are holding a position that says this is concerning. It's the wrong place for it. So
And we're trying to meet now. We're reaching out again to the Omidyars and their top people to say, you know, sit down with us. I mean, it's 0.6 miles from our ocean. It just really doesn't make any sense. There's too much risk of runoff. And the big thing, Felicia, in their final EIS, they did have some really good detail and data that is in there. And their engineers and their environmental people do admit there's going to be runoff. And they're going to lose manure into the environment. And they are going to have nitrate infiltration into the ocean. They actually detailed it and said it'll be over 10,000 pounds a year of nitrates. You know, I mean, this is a lot to throw into the ocean. And phosphorus,
right,
and hormones, and antibiotics. So we're saying, you know, please,
yes,
talk to us.
So,
please talk to us.
And I have callers holding on another topic, but I want to say between what the court said and then the withdrawal of the statement, it sounds like the Friends of Mahalapu and the people who are concerned about the health impacts and the environmental impacts of the Hawaii Dairy Farm have been somewhat vindicated, that, it, you know, both the Office of Environmental Quality Concern and the Supreme Court in Hawaii. Was it the Supreme Court? Yeah, they said, yep, you know, not everything is there. So thank you so much for calling in and updating us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for your interest, Felicia, really, in helping us get the word out.
Yeah, that's what Kauai Community Radio is here for. Thank you so much.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. And thank you so much for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, aloha, Felicia. You were, before the dairy lady called, you were starting to talk about the Kauai Humane Society and about the board and looking like the issues have gone through, you know, different generations of staff, and it seems like the issue could be the board. So,
yeah,
do
so
you
help,
have an idea?
Help me with that. I mean, I know that, like, when Sherry Ho, if I, you might know more.
Yeah, I know Sherry Ho. I worked with her during that time, yeah.
Wasn't she the director that when it first got built, it seemed to me that it was going to be a no-kill Humane Society?
Oh, I don't know if they had that.
Okay, I think it had been. Okay, but
I don't know if that was going on there, but...
There's been a history of difficult transitions, if I remember.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of political stuff, you know. But the thing is we care about the animals, and we want the animals to thrive. So if we were to identify the problem as the board, how do you get a new board in a nonprofit like that, you know?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not on that board, and I'm not particularly close to that board. I just, like, if I was somebody who was renewing a contract, I would be looking with close scrutiny at the board, because it seems like the board doesn't change, and it is, or not much, and that is really the responsible party above the executive director. And so when we're seeing a trend line of continued complaints, at least for me, in the role that I play on Kauai Community Radio fielding concerns, this didn't start with Penny. You know, there's been complaints over time.
Oh, definitely. There's a huge history.
And you know, I have friends that, to me, are verging on a nervous breakdown, you know, over the stress that they go through relative to some of the challenges that happen there. So when we see these kind of impacts on the community and we're looking at a trend line, I think, all right, why doesn't it change? What is staying the same? And
yeah,
one of the things that's staying the same for the
right,
most part,
and what's
is
the consistent
board.
Thing the through yeah. all the way back to Sherry Ho and even before that, you know, it's like, what's the consistent thread? And, you know, it's not like the board is bad people. The, you know, it's Ron Wiley and those guys. They're doing the best they can, but
Ron
it's not working.
Is Ron
you know?
On the board?
And it's, so I don't know what that process is, but to me, like with all the discussions we've had about the Humane Society, it looks like we've identified the thread that runs throughout the issues.
Well,
and so I just don't know where, how, and how you proceed with that.
Well,
process,
I've been on a number of boards, and it's a lot of work to be on a board. And I'm sure for these people who are sitting there fielding problem after problem after problem, the board members,
yeah,
it's probably pretty exhausting to them too. I'm not trying to tear them apart as individuals. It's just when, you know, maybe they might choose to step down. I mean, I would, if I was on a board and there seemingly was that many challenges. And one thing I look at, especially when I see the audit, like the audit pretty much was guilty as charged, you
uh-huh.
know, that there was
but
a problem. And
the thing is, Felicia, you're not, you know, you're not operating from ego, and so you would step down in the highest good, but most people don't operate from that place, you know. I mean, that's what we're dealing with. It's kind of egos, you know?
Well, I guess I don't know any of them enough to make an assessment like that. I haven't been close enough, but I have looked, and what I see is that there are career pathways, military, police, different things like that. And so, you know, we all come from whatever background. So if we had maybe a resort operator, and that's not who I'm suggesting should be there, but if we had a resort operator and a special ed preschool or something like that, they might have a completely different mindset than...
Right, kind of a more eclectic group, yeah.
Well, if I was adjusting the board, I would make sure there's a vet or two on there. I would have a representative from these different rescue groups. And quite frankly, if the rescue groups had more responsibility in it, they might actually see their own pathway differently. It's easy to blame when you're not responsible.
Yeah, yeah, good point.
It is so easy to blame when you're not responsible.
Yeah, always easier than to take responsibility, for sure.
You can, and if they're in that position of responsibility, maybe they can both help it, and they might understand where there is need for some softening. I think that there would, you know, if I was setting up a board position, I would structure somebody in from the endangered species people. It should be somebody in there who... is looking out for the impacts of all the the stray or feral animals. That seems like would be on there. You certainly need probably a lawyer, somebody with really strong, good business skills. Boards typically have a structure so that there's a round table of knowledge, and then also hopefully people who have a good insight to big donors, because you're going to need that. So that would be what I would think would go on the board. And I'm not close enough to it to be tearing down any individuals, but I just have looked and seen that it has not changed very much.
Yeah, and this, you know, I mean, this has been going on for years. I mean, let's get this thing handled. These are our animals, you know.
And it, you know, what my testimony, I just did a written testimony. It wasn't in there, but there's a lot of hidden costs. What I'm watching the council talking about is the use of the county funds, because that's their responsibility. But I think that there is also the hidden costs when it is emotional distress, when it's housing problems that come out of it, when it is, you know, my big focus is young people. And so the ability to have a pet as a growing child is profound in terms of building responsibility, coping with grief, coping with lots of different elements. And when they basically aren't allowed to have a pet, or their pet is needlessly killed, I mean, I've watched, you know, specific stories on that.
Right,
and
right, very traumatic.
Very traumatic, and it, you know, it hurts the community. We need to have a little bit different way of looking at these problems.
Yeah, I think it's time for a new system, but I don't really know how to do that. And so let's have people call in. It's such a hot item, and it's just like, you know, I'm for, like, what else is possible. I'm sure we can handle this, but we need to get to the root of it, you know?
Yeah. Did you see, I mean, I went to one of these talks. It was Nathan Winograd. He talking about what works across the country. And I've certainly seen that Scott Pisani, who I had on the show, I think, what did we have him, Marshall, like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
he's the new executive director, and he seemed
familiar. Yeah, he seemed like he was pretty cooperative.
Yeah, and using some of those marketing tools. I mean, I noticed that before he even came in. He said that he has read his books. He seemed very familiar with the material. And
God, I feel so bad for someone who comes in that's new to the island. He just has no idea what he's walking into, but maybe he has some skills and some gifts that he can help us with, you know?
Well, I think that it's really important to be able to resolve this so people's families aren't hurt by needless, they use the word euthanasia, but euthanasia to me is an appropriate word, like if somebody really needs to go down, that they're at the end of their life, and if a creature is in full health, that's not really euthanasia, it's being put to sleep, it's being killed.
Yeah, the death, it's like a death of a family member.
It's a death of a family member.
Unless you're an animal person, you don't understand that, but it's very traumatic for our young kids. And then I'd like to see a lot more activity around education for the youth.
Yeah, and it's traumatic for other ages, too. Sometimes people are lonely. Sometimes their pets are their family. Sometimes it's a security dog. There's a lot of reasons.
Yeah, for sure. The people in my life, their pets are their family members, you know?
Yeah, so it's I think, I can't remember, I think it was Gandhi or somebody like that said, you know, you can judge a culture by how they treat their creatures.
I love that quote. I think that there's that's very showing, you know,
who
it's like
that?
How we treat our animals is kind of a printout on where we're coming from in life.
Mm-hmm.
Whew.
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you. I just wanted to return to that call and just see, I know you've got a lot of close people in there, and I've been here on the island a long time. I just would like to see that issue cleared up once and for all. And I think it's possible.
Yeah,
you know?
And the county council is working on that discussion through their agreement with their contract. So that's
yeah.
going up for
it's
two different
It's amazing you're still going to all those meetings. Are you going to run again?
You know, I actually missed those two meetings, so that's why I made I made an appointment.
But
I went in and talked, and I went
on,
and sent that.
You go to all those meetings. God bless you, you know, and thank God somebody's there doing that, you know.
That's part of, I feel like, being a good programmer here at Kauai Community Radio also. We do our very best, and we have different programs and different specialists, and their Pets in Paradise is on Saturday, really great program that focuses on pets.
Yeah, Dr. Basco.
He's great.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like I really want to thank you for your dedication and keep bringing this to the light. And, you know, if anyone knows that process of how you wrote a rooter, you know, a system that's been in.
Okay, my guess, this would be my guess.
Okay.
My guess is writing respectful letters direct to the Humane Society board themselves, you know, and make it respectful. I like to presume that nobody who's doing these things wants to hurt the community
and
the animals.
Yeah, me too.
And
come from the highest good.
The highest good. And, you know, people who take a job like that, it's got to be heartbreaking. Most people wouldn't work in an animal shelter
It's horrible. It's the worst job I've ever had.
And they probably love animals, and it's probably really, really rough for them. So whether they're on the board or they're working there, they need our love, but we might be able to love them into a better situation for them.
So just call them to the highest good of, like,
this isn't working, and we
appreciate what you've contributed, and what about a changing of the guards or something like that?
Yeah, and maybe making a suggestion. And, you know, I haven't looked recently. I have looked before, basically reacting to the intensive complaints. Like, people have been so angry at this situation, and they're going after individuals. And I have said, hey, you know what? It's probably not the individuals. It's probably something within the system. Like, for example, there's a state law that the County of Kauai has to work with Kauai Humane Society, and they can't work with a competitive organization. So it's weird that one of the four counties has a monopoly structured in place. So, you know, I would upend that. You know, you have to kind of create policy environments that make it healthier. But the individuals, I think it's really important always, whether you're writing to a legislator or council person or whatever, is to assume that you agree on more than you disagree on. And then to just nicely say, you know, let's try a rotation. And can the board, you don't want, well, maybe you would, I don't know. I mean, I 100% to leave the board, the place is probably going to be in a lot of struggle, but you want a rotation, and you could just say, we'd like to try that. And if I was on the board, I'd think, okay, you know, they have no idea what we're going through, but you know what, I'm going to step down for a bit, and I'll just watch and you know, help if I'm asked.
Mm.
And then just to see, and maybe something better would come out. And that's what I would do. I would write a respectful letter to them directly.
Mm, I love your style, Felicia, and I hope you do run again.
Thank you for
believing
in me.
Your dedication is obvious, and we're so grateful for you.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, hon.
Okay.
Take care. Aloha.
Aloha. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you.
KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea K224CQ Anahola.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. Please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you. Your support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana, Montana in the center of the Pacific. Mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
And it does, and people could always just go in and hit the donate button on kkcr.org. We're going to have another fund drive. We do it twice a year, so we got one coming up, I don't know, maybe in another month or so. But when people do donate, and like the way I like to do my donation is I do a monthly donation, and I don't hardly even notice it that way, and it helps the station stay solid and strong.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man and Second Skin.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Second Skin Organics Hawaiian Mosquito Shield. Safe and effective. Protecting you and your ohana since 2001. Kauai grown, GMO free, sustainable organic agriculture based solutions. Uamau ke'e o ka'aina I ka pono. More information on their global mission and vision for Hawaii at secondskinorganics.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We've been doing this for 19 and a half years, and we have so many wonderful people on our team. Like, I just really want to give an extra shout out to Dean Rogers. He's always been somebody who keeps us physically working, too. Not only, helping programmers and all of that, but, you know, climbing up on those towers and doing great things. So we love Dean.
Poking around at machines with blinking lights. You don't even, yeah.
I know. And then, you know, Kauai Community Radio is basically volunteer. And so we come in here maybe 2 hours a week. It might, like Marshall and I, we spend many, many more hours a week getting prepared for this show. Like, we're just speaking with the last caller. Part of it is attending all these meetings and being involved in so many different efforts and ideas, but it does take support for us programmers, because we I listen to some of the commercial radio and realize these guys are in there probably 30 hours a week, so I'm really impressed with what a good job that they do in bouncing around to all their songs without a flaw or something like that. And, you know, we can be struggling. But what we're about is having citizens be able to really have a diverse reflection of what's going on in the community.
And we do give a forum for underrepresented voices constantly.
Right. And that is certainly part of our Kuleana on Kauai Soapbox. So if people want to call in to 826-7771, or if you are off our island chain, it's 808. We're all 808 over here. 808-826-7771. And Marshall, you do your own range of things. You're a huge volunteer in the community. How is the community emergency response team efforts coming along?
Oh, going great. You know, I went to a training on traffic control, which was great thing to attend, because it's one of the things we'd be more likely to be asked to do, actually, is to go out and help direct traffic, especially in Princeville, because in a lot of situations you'd have traffic streaming up from Hanalei, and we need to help figure out where to send all that.
And that would be because Hanalei is down at ocean level, so if there's a big storm, a big flood, or a tidal wave, tsunami, whatever we want to call it, they're more vulnerable down there, so they have to get up the hill.
They have to get up the hill and
With one bridge
and pulling their trailers and boats behind them. yes, most part.
Yes, yeah. I've definitely watched that. I used to live in Hanalei for a very long time. So another thing I want to mention is that the Kauai Island Utility Cooperative ballots are out. Mm-hmm. I should have brought mine in with me.
Yeah, I probably got mine.
Pardon me?
I got mine.
With you?
No.
Okay. I know we have three incumbents running again. That would be Dee Kroll, who used to work in the planning department. It was tough for me, as almost every one of them are friends of mine. There's Jim Mayfield, who was with the Bank of Hawaii for a long time. And Jim Mayfield has been involved since the very beginning. There is Alan Smith, who I believe is the current chair, and he has a lot of experience. He was with Lihui Plantation for a very long time, and he's a native-born Kama'aina guy, Hawaiian. And he did take a short time working for Syngenta before he shifted back with a stronger emphasis at Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. Then Mina Marita, who has been our representative at the State House before for District 14. She was also in the head of the Public Utilities Commission for the State. Public Utilities Commission has direct oversight with utilities, which is electric, you know. So she's coming in there with a lot of background and a lot of capacity to understand what's happening, especially at a state level. Kipukai Kualii is running. He has been a county councilman in, I believe, two different terms. He is not currently sitting on the county council. He's from Anahola. Norma Dr. Sparks, who we've had on the show here a number of times, she got her doctorate in law. She worked Los Angeles County Department of Health and Human Services. She was a deputy attorney general for the state for something like 20 or more years. She has a lot of capacity. She ran for county council last time.
Right.
I saw Juno Apollo, young woman, who ran for county council, definitely very involved in trying to help the community. Her background is in finance. And so she's been, just the process of running for office causes you to really be looking at and going out and connecting with all the different demographics.
For those who feel like a change is needed at KIUC, what would be, what would they say is not working now?
Would they say or would I say?
Well,
I mean,
do you feel like a change is needed?
Well, I mean, here's my deal with the Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. I think they basically do a pretty darn good job.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I get a lot of heat for backing them up a lot, and I have to own the fact that I was among them when I had a role at the North Shore Business Council. I was pushing really hard for it to be a cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
I was younger then. I knew less, but I have to say I'm very thankful that we have a cooperative. I want to recognize that they get power out, that they've got this aggressive movement towards, you know, renewable energy. I fully support that. I like that they have very little incidence of accidents. I mean, I'm actually a big champion of KIUC. I don't know that they see me that way because there are some areas, I think, when we look at KIUC, the C they're a little weak on. That's the cooperative. I've teased them before and said they had to hire me to be their public outreach person. I am only half joking when I say that. I think their public outreach is a little bit weak. You know, it's run more like a company than a cooperative. To me, a cooperative extends a lot. They do some beautiful things. Like, I really like the recipes they give out. They have this, I always read their Currents magazine that they send. I have their art calendar. I like all those things. And I would be more proactive with the hard issues. Like, they have the LPG liquid. Hold on.
Liquid propane gas?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Felicia, please look it up, because last week when we had the harbor pilot in here talking about that, it's an important issue about what kind of fuel do we use, and do we want to really invest in all this new infrastructure to change the fuel? And we've got a call. Hopefully it's about this, and I don't know if I really – I'm going to look to make sure that I've given every candidate some focus, because I'm not trying to bias against – and so he asked me what I like. I think it'd be better if they were stronger at the cooperative stuff. I struggle with the full diversion of the water. You know, we've had issues with getting the FERC permits on doing dams. I don't want to see us federalizing anything here. And I know Carol Bain, good friend of mine, she was on there. She's passed recently. And she had this idea of a water battery. And I'm not sure where that's going. KKCR, thank you for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, aloha, Felicia. Great show, as always.
Thank you.
Glad you guys are talking about KIUC and the elections. It's a really wonderful opportunity for people who own the co-op, the membership, to have some input and give some directions to the strategic choices that are made at the co-op.
And I know you look at it probably closer than I do, so I want to hear your mana'o on it.
Well, so just a small correction. Jan Ten Rugenkate is the present chair of the board at KIUC.
Oh, yeah,
Alan
you're
Smith
right.
was, but
yeah.
He, as you mentioned, stepped down and was working with, was this Syngenta, is that right?
Yeah, but I don't think he's still there.
Yeah, well, at the time, he felt like it was a conflict of time schedule. So I don't know why exactly what would change in his schedule if he came back, but
I think
he was reappointed by the board. He did not get elected to the position that he's in. And the board, with the passing of Carol Bain and also the resignation of a couple of other directors immediately after elections, has been able to appoint the majority of itself onto the board. So right now there's a voting majority of 5 out of the 9 directors who were not elected to the seats that they're serving. Every time there was an opening, they would appoint one of the sitting directors to that available chair, and then give them more time in their term than they were elected to. And so Dee Crowell is one of the appointees, one of the new guys. He was a retread as well. He was on the board several years ago. So to answer your co-host question about, like, you know, what to some people who would like to see some change at KIUC, what did they say? Well, I think you touched upon really the big issue, and that is that the board, rather than taking input from the membership, really seems to serve to insulate management from any kind of effective participation by the membership.
Okay, so, I'm gonna say yes to that. I think I'm in agreement with that.
So, which is not to say that they're not capable, competent people helping run the electrical utility. That certainly is true. You know, very, very skilled people. They're good at the jobs. The engineers there are top notch. The safety record is great. And, you know, they're doing a lot of good things. They are not leaders in solar power the way they would have you believe it, though, because up until quite recently, with the brand new solar array that just came on, KIUC sat on their heels for 10 years while the private sector, you know, people like you and me and everybody else who's got solar panels on their roofs, led the way. So, you know, the leadership that KIUC claims for itself in solar utility is really leadership from behind. They sat and they watched and waited for the market to demonstrate itself rather than moving forward for years. But, you know, that was the previous CEO. So the CEO there now has come up with some clever ways to incorporate solar power. And, you know, I'm really happy to see that.
So can I jump in and say,
sure.
This is KKCR, Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, Felicia Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And right now we are talking about the Kauai Island Utility Cooperative elections. And on the point that you just made about solar and waiting to go in, I will say that those of us who invested, and I'm not unhappy that I made my investment, but those of us who invested in, with part of it being the buyback of the electric where it goes back onto the grid, that the value of that has dropped to nearly nothing.
Invested in solar panels, you're saying?
Yes, invested in the solar panels.
Yeah, you're talking about net metering and the, you know,
well,
PIG.
Schedule Q is what it is.
Well, Schedule Q is what it is now, but net metering is what it used to be, and that's when they were buying back the power that they generated for the same cost that they were selling to you for.
That's right. So I can get it, though, that they want to do a Schedule Q. I don't have a problem with that, but the what they buy it back from you at now is their very cheapest unit to purchase, which is the solar unit. So
yeah,
if they had put pennies, that solar in first, then maybe people wouldn't have put it in, though I still would have.
It's pennies on the dollar, and it's a good business, you know, action from the co-op, but it's not, it doesn't serve the community very broadly. It serves the co-op as a business, but it doesn't serve the community broadly. And the reason why individuals such as yourself and thousands of other people around the island put solar panels on their own roof is because it was a better deal, you know, that individual homeowners were able to create electricity with the tax incentives and stuff for cheaper than KIUC, which goes to show you that the main contribution that KIUC had to helping people get solar on their roofs was charging an extremely high rate of power such that it was cost effective for folks to do it themselves. But to get back to
I do want to add one thing on that, though, because you said my reason for doing it, and I will tell you that my number one reason for doing it is I have lived completely on my own on solar in the past, and I appreciate, even now, I appreciate my solar system. I have batteries on my system, and I never have a power outage. The system can go down. I have batteries. It just keeps working. And when I work hard to do my own stepping lightly on the earth, that's what I did. And it brought my, you know, my monthly bill is not much more than the basic cost of having, being on the grid, not having a smart meter. I get charged $10 a month for not having a smart meter. The smart meter issue was kind of a big deal to me. I bought my system because I'm used to knowing the freedom of having my own power system, and that was my number one reason.
Sure, and it also, I mean, that's one small step towards building resiliency across the island. When you have distributed systems, you are not going to have a single point of failure, so... So that's there's a lot of good reasons to do that, but if you wanna encourage the co-op to be more open to community involvement, if you wanna vote for folks who are going to help move the cooperative not just in a good business direction but in a good community direction, then probably you don't want to support any of the incumbents or any of the people who were involved before. So you know, look at the new faces there. Dr. Norma Sparks, she has lots of competencies, and you know, give her a shot. See what happens. And I would say the same thing for Juno Apollo. She's a fresh young face. Clearly, she wants to engage in community service, so you know, give her a chance. Kipukai Kuli'i seems like a decent guy. I wasn't always happy with some of the things that he supported on the council because it seemed like he wasn't as independent a voice as I would hope. But you know what? Give him a chance. He's never really been involved in power issues. Be good to have a Hawaiian on there. It's those are fresh faces. If you want to help KIC move in a fresh direction, it doesn't make sense to vote for the people who were appointed by the board self-appointing itself.
Do you consider Mina a fresh face?
Well, you know, I would not, and I have two reasons why. I have a lot of respect for Mina Marina. She's very competent. She's got a great record in the House as a rep for Kauai and the North Shore. But she's been a very strong proponent of liquid natural gas.
LNG, I was saying.
A meeting about a year and a half ago with Apollo Kauai where She was essentially the spokeswoman for the liquid natural gas position, and I do not support investing billions of dollars in infrastructure for more fossil fuels if they're, you know, 20% cleaner than something else. It's not the direction that we need to move in. It's just, that's my opinion. It's not the direction we need to go in.
So let me ask
the second,
you, okay,
the
go
second
ahead.
The reason why I can't support Mina is because going back to her role as the PUC commissioner,
Public
there were many,
Utilities
many times
Commission.
The KIC petitioned the PUC, and every time that they went there, she and the rest of the board just rubber stamped their position. That was the case with the, you know, when KIC said, hey, can we charge people for meters that they didn't ask for and don't want to use? And the Utility Commission said, sure. And, you know, apart from whether you think that the meters are health issues or not, it just doesn't make any sense to do that. That's just not good policy to spend people's money that they don't give you permission to and then charge them if they don't support your policy. I mean, that's not what a cooperative – it's not very cooperating.
Can I give a shout out to KIUC for being a good cooperative on a very minor note?
You know what? I love to praise KIUC, and they're doing lots of things well. You know, the way they've helped a little bit sort of in the third or fourth quarter move towards solar is great. And I always make a point to praise KIUC whenever I can. So go right ahead.
Okay. And I just wanted to give a shout out to my warm and friendly lineman. I think his name was Scott. When my vines were all growing up around my power lines, and Marshall and Paul were going to come cut it off, and I don't want them to get electrocuted. So I asked KIUC to turn the power off when we were doing it. And so he came to do it, and he's like, hey, you know, and he just cut all the vines off the lines. And he tightened up the lines and did it all with a smile and did it quickly and, you know, just was really eager to help. And I know that the linemen are different than the company leadership, but that tells me that there is something good in the corporate culture that's going on there.
Oh, well, there's lots of good things going on at KIC, and I don't know if it was the same lineman, but we had an issue here with our lychee trees growing into the lines. He came out and he just did a super fast, crisp, professional, polite. It's a great job. It's really amazing. There's tons of good people working for KIC. And the management and the leadership team are, you know, very competent and skilled, but they are not always very communitarian. And, you know, the water issue is an example of that. Part of the mission of the KIC is to be a good environmental steward, and it's not good environmental stewardship for them to divert all of the water most of the time from the streams, because it leaves the streams dry. They literally starve of thirst, and you know, you can't have a healthy environment if there's no water in it. So,
and you and I both know that really Grove Farm is the end recipient of all that water. It isn't.
Well, Grove Farm and KIC are working together to turn the natural watersheds into millions of dollars of revenue for their business model.
All right,
and,
I'll give you that.
It's a partnership.
I'll give you
of
that.
Some kind.
Mm-hmm. So that's and you know, as that gets worked to be corrected, because the run of the river is essential for a healthy watershed. You know, if it really seems to me right now that they could allow 30, 40, it's supposed to be 50% of the water to carry on downstream.
Well,
that it's mostly
like it's,
just surrendering potential rather than surrendering the present, because when they have 100% of the water, they hold the potential for future development. If they let go,
yeah, and you know that you can't. It's not ethical to prioritize the growth of private sector profit over the public trust of the natural environment. It's just no good. The stream deserves a majority share of the watershed. I mean, we can live lightly on the land. We don't have to suck it dry to have a nice lives. So.
Well,
so if you want to encourage the competent and capable leadership of KIUC to become better engaged with the community, I would encourage people to vote for new faces who have never been on the board before and have never weighed in on issues before KIC before, where it comes to consumer concerns versus the business model. And so I encourage people to vote for the new folks, Gino Apala, Dr. Arnold Sparks, and keep Bukai Kuali'i, because, hey, you know what? Be nice to see some fresh faces at KIC.
Jonathan, to what extent do you think some technical knowledge of running a power utility is necessary or at least useful to people in these positions?
Well, I think that's a great question, and the answer may surprise you, but not terribly important, because they're not the engineers who are running the lines and making sure that the power is clean and evenly distributed. The job of the board of directors is to be a conduit of community concerns to the co-op. So there's plenty of people that they can consult at the co-op, engineers, professionals, MBAs, all kinds of people like that. They can run the numbers, and they can show different efficiency diagrams and different models and such. But what they can't do is they can't represent the community. And that's the important skill set that's missing from KIC. It's a great little business. You know, they've got a good corporate culture there. They've got a good staff. They've got a good workforce. I think they got a safety record that speaks for itself. They're doing all kinds of good things from a business perspective. But where they still have room for improvement is community engagement and some of their responsibilities that go above and beyond the bottom line, like their commitment to environmental stewardship.
And so, Felicia and Jonathan, both of you, actually, did you see in today's Garden Island the article about the proposed solar project for PMRF?
No, I did not.
I did not. And I want to say that when I listed all of the candidates, I, from memory, had done it correctly. Every single one of them I did mention.
You go.
So I will say that one more time.
I do want to say, though, about power for KIC. Is, it's great that they are moving away from fossil fuels in terms of how they generate the power, you know, the power purchase agreement with green energy for biomass, the different solar farms. That's all great, but, you know, that's the supply side of the energy equation. They haven't been as aggressive or interested, really, in addressing the demand side. You know, right now, I think they say we're at like 39-40% of not a renewable energy for the grid. Is that about right?
Say that one more time. What percent?
Right now, KIC, I think they say they're at about 40% non-renewable.
Higher than correct. I think they have a higher non-renewable than that.
Towards 50%. But let's say
they're working
at 50%. You know, how are they going to get the next 50%? Well, the easiest way, the cheapest, best bargain is just to use less power. You know, and there's all kinds of ways you can use less power, just like there's all kinds of ways you can generate power not from petroleum sources, like wind and wave and solar and such. But there's all kinds of ways on the same side you can reduce your electrical consumption. And the KIC has not been as aggressive in exploring the demand side reduction. So that's where I would really like to see a great shift. That will benefit everyone.
You know, Beth Tokioka, the spokeswoman for KIUC, says with regard to the PMRF proposed solar project, that a project this size would help us get very close to our goal of reaching 100% renewable generation. So it could be a significant factor.
Sure, and that's great, but it's like what I just said bounced completely off you, because it doesn't address demand. And
no, I'm hearing that, and I want to address that.
You can't separate them.
I want to address that, and you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Jonathan's on the phone with us right now. We are talking about the KIUC, or Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, Board of Directors elections. And I want to address what you're just saying, because it didn't bounce off me. So when you're talking about, I like your term, negawatts, like how do you do demand side reduction? And I'm one of those who's pretty good at the demand side reduction.
Well, you know that because you're generating your own, you made the investment to generate your own power.
And I
you
have,
know how expensive
I
it
have
is
lived
to generate
that
power
way.
That you don't need to burn.
So I want to share something, though. Just let me say this for a second. Going to the water board meetings, the Department of Water, they realized, okay, they needed more money. So they decided, let's raise the rate. Let's raise the water rate. So they raised the water rate, and guess what? People started using less water, and collectively, they had less money to run their water department. And so I think that sometimes what happens, I'm not agreeing that it's correct, because what you're saying is accurate. Like when I look at the financial statement on the website of KIUC, boy, that's a good job. Those people may be part of the reason they don't make mistakes and everybody's happy and nice. Is it's like there's a lot of people who are well paid. I'd say there's probably 10 or 15 people who get paid more than the mayor last time I looked.
Oh, yeah. No, they are very well paid.
They are very well paid.
Probably they deserve it.
Probably they deserve it. But so they have a very well paid broad staff. And so, you know, they probably don't want to go for the megawatts because then they can't fund their program the way it's funded. So that's probably
sure.
part of it.
Well, but, you know, that mm-hmm. that would be better for the community because we would be spending less money off-island for our power desires, and they would have to reconfigure their business model accordingly. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm agreeing. I'm
that'd be a good thing.
I'm recognizing the validity of your statement and, you know, also pointing out what happens, like kind of segueing a little bit, Jonathan, but you might be paying attention to this somewhat. They have this bill at the legislature to be shifting the transient accommodation tax, you know, over a period of 3 years, 100% away from the county. I think that, you know, that one really gets my blood going because I remember when the TAT came up, and that came out of the Kauai Economic Development Board, and it was Gary, oh my gosh, it'll come to me. I can't believe I'm forgetting his name right now. He was somebody from Kauai that came up with this idea, and that was around the time that they were putting this convention center together. And the TAT tax, the transit accommodation tax, was basically tapping the people on vacation to be paying their fair share of what the counties spend for roads, parks, search and rescue, police, fire, garbage, you know, the bus.
Sure.
Everybody pays for, I mean, everybody uses that. The potholes
right,
on the county.
But then it just becomes a cash cow and everybody wants to milk it. So that's how the state, you know, was able to push the counties aside. They're like, hey, that's a nice revenue source.
George Baldwin, that's who it was. Okay, no. Oh, okay. I mean, no, I'm still getting it wrong. Spacing on the name of the person, but yeah, so now they want to take it all, and that's a terrible plan, I think.
Well, just to close the circle and on the reason why I called, hey, you know what, let's help our co-op become even better by getting some fresh faces on the board of directors as opposed to the self-appointed, self-perpetuating majority that's on there right now. I would encourage people not to vote for any of the incumbents or the people who have been involved with KAC previously and get some new faces on the board. So, yeah, Juno Apollo, Dr. Norma Sparks, and Kipukai Kuli'i. Hey, they can't possibly do worse in terms of being a better conduit of community concern back to the co-op that we are all members and owners of. So I think KIC is a great business, and I would like them to become an even better community player.
And so I would maybe frame that we could hold out that maybe there are people who could do a better job. I don't know if it's true that no one could do worse, but I appreciate the intention of what you're saying.
But the folks who are there right now are there by the virtue of the contacts that they have. And, you know, literally it's working for them because they're there. So they're not going to be greatly inclined to change that. And they're nice people and they're competent and that's all great. But I personally think that we need some fresh faces in there. And I think it will I think it will help send a message to KISD like, hey, you guys are a great business. We'd like you to be a better community partner.
Okay, thank you so much for calling. Aloha, you're on the air. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm not sure if I can hear you very well. This is Terry Lilly. I'm calling in from down at Tunnels Beach.
Hi, Terry. Can you hear me? This is Felicia.
Yeah, I can hear you better now. Thanks, Felicia. Hey, I just wanted to comment on the PMRF new proposal for the solar power plant out there.
Okay.
I think that they should use their property for a solar power plant. That's a wonderful idea. And supplying the people of Kauai with electricity from a solar power plant, I think, is another wonderful idea. But I just want to point out that the main reason that PMRF wants to put in the power plant out there is to supply their military microwave warfare campaign that's using over 992 billion watts of focused microwave energy.
So help me, how does a solar system do that?
Exactly what it looks like on the surface. Mm-hmm. They're utilizing that solar power plant for the purpose of war. And if they would stop doing that and build a solar power plant out there for helping the community in Kauai, that would be a wonderful thing.
Okay, I have another question for you. You still there?
Yeah.
I see that you have been posting about the seawall on the east side. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because your skill set on that is deeper than mine.
Yes, I can. And I'm kind of losing reception, so I can hopefully you can hear me okay, because I'm like down at Makuhu right now and I don't have good reception. But we've been doing a very extensive marine life study in the Kapa'a Lagoon. We have an on-site for that, and we're going to document all of the marine life in the Kapa'a Lagoon and then share that information with the local schools. So what we found out the other day is in front of the Ponokai hotel where they put in the seawall, that the county has repeatedly, week after week, been dumping tons of sand and sediment onto the beach that continually washes away in the surf. That sand and sediment actually has gone out and smothered a coral reef and killed pretty much all the marine life in the area. So, and that's a violation of the Clean Water Act, and you'll see a lot of news on this in the next couple of days that we're trying to deal with at this point in time.
So is that new hotel being built behind the black dust screens?
Please say again, Felicia. I can barely hear you.
Is that the new hotel under construction that's behind the black shade cloth?
No, not that I know of. This is the Ponokai Hotel that's been there for quite a long time.
Okay.
In Kapa'a, where they put in that new seawall.
Okay.
And,
I gotta go look at it.
The seawall that they put in created a huge problem with the currents and the waves there in front of the hotel. And then that ended up deteriorating the beach next to the seawall.
Okay.
So now the county is coming in there week after week and putting outside soil and sand onto the beach to try to repair this problem. And then that's all washing out onto the reef and killing the corals and the marine life.
Terry, what's the time frame within which this has been happening?
I can barely hear you. I hope I get the question right. They put the seawall in about 6 months ago, or rebuilt the seawall. And then currently they've been dumping tons and tons and tons of sand and sediment onto the beach virtually every week. And over about 3 years ago, 2 to 3 years ago, there was a very healthy coral reef out in front of the Ponokai Hotel. And our documentary movie that I ended up doing the last couple of days has shown a 99% death of all the corals and marine life. And the sand that they put on the beach is now pretty much smothered and killed the entire coral reef there.
My, I know you're paying really diligent attention to the coral reef, not only on Kauai, but also Oahu, and flying around in the world and looking at different places in the Pacific. So I will go down and try and look at that myself. I saw your pictures, and otherwise I wouldn't have known about it. So I'm going to go check that out. So thank you for that.
Well, you're more than welcome, Felicia. And my work is basically just being in the water with a camera, documenting what's going on with our ocean to share with everyone. So maybe we can make a little better progress down the road for taking care and of our ocean environment. And the other thing about your guests there, which is really a lovely conversation, by the way, we're also studying that the deviation of water out of the streams, especially Kalia Stream, absolutely affects the coral reefs. People need to understand that every stream and river here on Kauai has evolved over millions of years, and the coral reefs and marine life depend on when and where that stream is emptying its fresh water out into the sea. So if you deviate water out of the stream, you're going to completely alter the coral reef ecosystem. So this is something that we're right now have a grant. We're going to be teaching the schools on how this process works.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
All right. You're more than welcome. Aloha.
Aloha. Okay. And today is the 28th day of Pepe Luali. Pepe Luali, February. And February is Hawaiian Language Month on KKCR, and so we are going to be hearing from Kawaikini. They've been doing a great job. This one is Kelea. He's, I don't know if that's a boy or girl. We'll see in a minute. A 10th grader who is giving us the Kawaikini language lesson. And then we have another caller that will be coming in just after that.
Kaweka wena o ke au I karani.
He veke veke I ka po filipuka. He lele o ka poni poni ikina. Kau ke kare awana au I ka ala a papa. He ilana yuna o ke kukulu o karani la. O kau ye uli alone kau lue ai ai. Ua.
First Hawaiian Immersion School opened its doors in Kekaha, Kauai. This chant recognizes a new day, a new dawn is upon us, and Hawaiian language is alive and well. Help us celebrate this month, Kamahina o Lalo Hawaii, Hawaiian Language Month.
E ola mau ka o
Lalo Hawaii. Long live Hawaiian language.
Aloha mai kako, o vau o kelea, o kala iwa ka lua kumuwalu, o pepe luali. O ka pō au lua ke ila. Kahi inoa hanakoa. Ka pila ana he anu a ke o a. Ka moku no pali. Ka unuhi ana he kai ku ono koa. Ona mana o nui o ia vahi. Ke haa elele ana o ka menehune I kuai. O hana ke au kona inoa. He menehune mo I vahine oia. Ua hele vāvai oia I ke ala hele ma kahi ona pali. A ua haule oia. Ma ke ku ona ona pahaku ma kapali, a ma ke ihola. Pela no I lilo aku ai, ke ia inoa o hane ke au. Ua ho'opokole, ke ia inoa o hane koa. Mahalo. Aloha, my name is Kelea. Today is Tuesday the 28th of February. My place name is Hanakoa. It is spelled H-A-N-A-K-O-A. It's in the district of Napali. The translation of this name is Warrior Bay. A Hawaiian proverb about it is, when the menehune were leaving, Hana Keo, a menehune chiefess, stepped onto the edge of the cliff. The stone rolled and she fell to her death. The valley was named in her memory, Hana Keo. The name was shortened to Hanakoa. Happy Tuesday.
Wow, well, I just learned something, and aren't we blessed with those beautiful voices from Kauai Kini. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. I have two callers holding, so we're going to get the first one and then the second. Mahalo for holding. Thank you. You're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, okay, good, because I can barely hear you, but I don't have my phone on speaker. Anyway, but at least I can hear you. And your previous caller talking about the beach area where the sandbar down by Pono Kai was built and talking about county landfill being put in for, because of beach erosion, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my reference is this. Less than a decade ago, maybe 6 years ago, they did the same thing because of beach erosion down at Kauai Beach Park that's down there by the library.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some people who frequented the beach, and I'm one included in what I'm going to mention, because the bacterial content within the fill that was used caused people, a number of them, and I'm included, five that I know of that received staph infection.
Mm, okay.
And I think that some of the soil or sand should be tested prior to being, you know, distributed in a beach area. And that's the only thing I wanted to say.
Okay, so a takeaway from that is that maybe when people, I'm not saying it shouldn't be corrected, and certainly testing is good, but also, for my own mind, I think if I see that kind of soil being placed, soil and sand being placed in an area, that wouldn't be where I would go swimming. You know, that's the individual level. The larger level is it needs to be tested. So thank you. Staff is really
okay.
A problem.
I thank you for listening to my spiel.
I appreciate it. Okay.
Aloha, Felicia. Have a good night.
Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. Aloha, Marshall. This is Andrew. How's
hey, Andrew.
Hey, Andrew.
Hey, I wanted to bring up a topic that Marshall said maybe we haven't talked about yet.
Okay, it's put your mouth right on the phone. Talk right into the phone.
Sure. It's House Bill 1533, introduced by Speaker Suki. It's 1533. It's to legalize prostitution. And my bias is pretty heavy, so I'm just going to say it. Not in my community, but apparently the House Speaker and others think that legalizing prostitution is somehow going to help the women. I think the history of law enforcement against male and female prostitution generally is a more go after the Janes, not the Johns. And the fact that kind of has nobody's really talking about that bill. I'm just kind of curious if you would like to weigh in, Felicia, Marshall, or if any other callers, but
well,
at least
I'm trying to pull it up.
This feminist is very much against legalizing prostitution, and the guys that frequent it need to go to jail. Not in my state. Go to Vegas for that. But that's not something I think we need to be speaking to our kids about, that, oh, yeah, no worries. If you're, you know, lonely, you can just spend some money and go get that fake love, you know, pay for love. Like,
do you have that bill up in front of you? I'm trying to
just
pull
Google
it.
It. 1533.
I'm trying. It won't come up. It won't come up. So,
well, anybody who's listening, just Google HB 1533.
Can you pull it up, Marshall?
At the Hawaii legislature. It's long. But there's also a Garden Island article about that.
I'm going to try and pull it up on my. I'm going to try and pull it up on my phone. The reason why I really that is. I know that there is something like that out there, and I want to look at it because it's a very important and kind of stunning choice. So I want to see if it really is legalizing prostitution, because that is huge. And
it's basically legal now. For anybody who hasn't really spent much time in Waikiki, the massage parlors, I think everybody knows that they're not getting therapeutic body work, right? When you go to the massage parlor that's open at 3 a.m.
Okay. I mean, I'm probably naive enough that I haven't even thought about it. So.
Well, you're a voice in the community, and as a father and you're a mother, like, I don't think the community would be in favor of this.
No.
But if there are some callers out there, I know I've had discussions with certain political groups that think that adults should be allowed to do whatever they want. Well, and I agree to some extent, but again, that's okay. My bias. I'm pretty strong. So I'd love to hear some other callers who are in favor of this bill or even get House Speaker Suki to see why this is even a problem.
I do want to point out that no testimony has been put in and no hearings have been scheduled. So, and it says Suki introduced it by request of another party. So the fact that it's not scheduled yet pretty much says that it is dead in the water. And what happens every legislative session is there's, you know, maybe 3,000 bills that are under consideration and about maybe 1,000 actually makes it. So this is to ensure the health, safety, and well-being of people in Hawaii. I see that it's basically saying consenting adults. And I'm in agreement with you that I think it is a bad choice because then it makes it even more possible for people. Usually it seems like the people who have this job are almost like enslaved young people.
Well, what are the arguments favor of this?
Go ahead, Marshall.
What are the arguments in favor of decriminalizing prostitution?
It says consenting adults.
I don't think they carry much weight, but I think the primary one is health and safety. So regular STI tests, safety. So, you know, the poor male or female sex worker would be subjected to all sorts of abuse mm-hmm. and things. But just like trying to legalize drugs, it's not like the government is going to supply all the drugs for you. If you legalize prostitution, it just creates underground prostitution.
Right. This says repeals the penalties for consensual adult prostitution and promotion of adult prostitution. Vacates
That's
convictions for conduct.
Legalizing, correct?
Yeah, it is. So I'm validating you. For conduct that is decriminalized and permits vacating convictions when defendant has no criminal convictions in the preceding 3 years. So I like to fact check because it's almost hard to believe that that would happen. But
and it's hard to believe it's coming from the speaker. So I really don't follow the kind of
it says,
more national politics. But just the fact that the Speaker of the House would introduce it, whether or not it goes anywhere, just the fact that powerful men think that is okay for our community makes me question what other powerful men in the House are thinking. And again, I'm going to hang up now, but please, if you guys, any callers out there that love prostitution, think it's a great thing, please weigh in, and I'll see you in Vegas, because that's where we already got, I don't know.
Okay, so thank you for calling that in. And thank you.
Have a blessed rainy day. Aloha.
Thank you for listening.
Felicia, we just had a caller, actually the previous caller, who had been talking about soil that was dumped on the beach
contaminated.
There. He said that he said Kauai Beach Park, and what he meant was Kapa'a Beach Park by the library.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And when I was hearing that, that's what I had interpreted. Jazz with John is coming up next at the top of the hour, and we will hear the county council report, but it's going to be very short because this is the National Association of Counties Organization Week, so I know at a minimum Derek Kawakami went over to, it's in Washington, D.C. this time. We have them in different places. I know Jennifer Ruggles from Hawaii Island. She's a brand new councilwoman over there. She spent quite a bit of time over here a couple of years ago, so she is what I consider a personal friend. She's been really reporting a lot of what they're learning there, and it's a way where counties from all over the country can cross-pollinate what's working for them. And I consider, you know, on the travel budget, sometimes people say that the travel budget's a disgrace. In my opinion, this is an example of a good expense because we can go and we can learn from each other's, victories and mistakes and, you know, what's happening. And that that's good. And
so you've been doing some filming, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I was going to jump to Trump, but I can go to the filming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have had some people that came over here from Washington State that were observing really some of the dialogue and activity going on Facebook, and then looking at things like our films that we did, The Healing the Soil, Akamai Backyard, different pieces, and wanting to submit a potential film series on ideas for resilience. What we haven't really decided totally what it's called, but looking at examples of what is working on Kauai, and then we'd kind of be looking at the policies that drive the challenges and the directions. You know, there's many things that take balance, and we went and we looked at a whole lot of different happy stories right now. I would call it Kauai Farm Stories. I mean, when we first grab it together, I'm going to put them or work with them to put them in single issue stories. And almost everybody has a beautiful thing that they're doing, and most of their focus is filled with that enthusiasm. And almost all of them, without even their complaining about it, have a challenge running really closely behind it. You know, whether that's a lease that's up, land that they have to get out of, places they're going to get grubbed, month-to-month leases. We really, as a bottom line, don't put enough emphasis on supporting food production, agriculture, or activities that support not needing the ships to come in. Last week we talked about shipping. So, you know, what's the alternative to that? How do we make things, you know, work better? And it's been really fun, and you know, I just love all the people in our community, and we will be doing more. And I have to say, what was really nice way today spend the day yesterday, John Cruz came over because he was happy to write a song or two. So there's sort of two songs underway we'll go into it, and so we were kind of group working on a composition for the songs.
Oh yeah, really? You want to hum a bar there?
I was gonna play a little clip, but I think I think I'm gonna wait. You know, we'll wait a little bit because I can't get the system to work very well anyway on the computer here. So yeah, we've got Jazz with John coming up, and I normally leave him with this county council report. There's not much of a county council report. John, do you want to throw in a CD so that people can hear some music while I shift over?
No, go ahead.
Let's go on over. Okay, he's so experienced. He has no problem getting up and stepping in, and Felicia struggles a little bit. Okay, so we love you, Kauai. We love you, Marshall, John, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. You make the world of difference for Kauai Community Radio. Certainly Kauai Soapbox would not be Kauai Soapbox without all of our callers and people who inspire each of the shows. So I thank great calls. We had great calls today, didn't we?
Yeah, that was really good.
It was powerful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so here's the county council report. Spoiler alert, it's not going to be there. But and then Jazz with John. Aloha.
Aloha.